You're listening to Blast Processing, the official podcast of all things video gaming, gadget, and gear related on DVDverdict.com. On this week's episode, Steve attempts to bring about societal change, John suplexes Steve from the top rope, and Kev is truly, truly outrageous. Hello, you are listening to Blast Processing, the official podcast of all things video gaming, gadget, gear, tablet, Advil, alcohol, whatever.
Yellow.
Purple on DVDverdict.com. With me, as usual, are my compadres, Mr. John Mercer.
I like purple.
Purple's good. And Mr. Kevin Woolridge.
So far, that's the weirdest introduction you've given.
I aim to please.
I really think he's getting worse.
That's generally the plan. Eventually, I'm just going to go...
DVD verdict.
Yeah. Anyway. Games. Herp derp games. We'll kick it off. Boys... John, Kevin, whichever one of you wants to go first, what you been playing?
I'll give Kev some time to think on this one.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
John's actually been playing something?
Yeah, it's only been one this week.
Oh.
I took Final Fantasy 13-2 for a test drive.
Yay!
Nice.
By that, I don't mean the demo.
By that, you mean full-on snazzy collector's edition retail box?
It's sitting in my lap right now.
It's sitting on my shelf, but it's still in plastic.
You should take it out, man. Feel that supple, rubbery...
boob.
Packaging.
That boob packaging.
Soft. Like a nipple. The hell is that?
Ha-ha! I think Charlie Murphy's in Kevin's house.
What is...
Or is it Eddie Murphy? It's Eddie Murphy.
It's Eddie Murphy.
It's Eddie Murphy.
It's his older brother.
It's Rick James. Kevin's having a party. It's a celebration.
I had to run out for 1 second. Everything's cool. And I'm back.
I really don't blame you, man. You probably heard me say Final Fantasy 13 too. Thought I said Final Fantasy 13 and ran the hell out of your apartment.
Actually, as soon as you said Final Fantasy, I was like, okay, whatever.
Anyway, John, how's Final Fantasy 13?
Final Fantasy, yeah.
How could there be 13 and two of them if it's final?
Oh, that doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense at all.
That joke is horrible. Played out. You're old heads.
It's so rote.
Where's my beret?
My snifter of brandy.
I'm not avoiding the subject here, boys. The game isn't bad by any stretch of the imagination. And after 13, I'd actually call it a step in the right direction.
Okay.
You know, it's still got that... I personally thought 13's combat was great.
Okay, you're insane, but keep going.
No. It's got that same real fast pace. It doesn't take 40 hours to get started.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, the characters don't make me want to put my fist through a television screen. Like they did in the last one.
Okay. I heard it has shops.
It does have shops.
That's pretty amazing.
And wide open areas to explore.
That's astounding.
And side quests.
Side quests.
Side quests.
That don't happen 40 hours into the game.
Yeah.
That's just crazy talk.
I don't think the game is actually 40 hours long.
Really?
But then again, another was Final Fantasy X, and everyone seemed to love that one.
Even Final Fantasy VII, man. My first time through Final Fantasy VII was only a 21-hour run.
No, I mean, it's as long as you make it,
yeah,
right?
I guess.
And it's better than... when was the last time they did a direct 10-2?
10-2. Oh, God. Oh.
Yeah, it's definitely better than that. They don't go the completely insane route this time.
So it's not Jim and the Holograms, the role-playing game?
No, it's not. Speaking of Jim and the Holograms, the role-playing game, though, despite all the jokes I made about the villain looking like Theater of Pain era Motley Crue,
okay,
he's actually really awesome.
Which villain is this?
The dude with the purple hair and the bandana.
Oh, from?
When you see it from 13-2.
Okay.
Yeah, he's actually pretty awesome, and man, now maybe that's just because he's got the same voice actor as War from Darksiders, but, you know, he's actually a pretty cool villain.
You're biased.
I am totally biased.
purple hair and bandana, now I can only think of the Misfits now.
Hey, man, you want to know something? If the Misfits had concentrated more on their music and less on trying to sabotage Jim, they were the better band.
Undoubtedly. I'm not going to argue with you there.
This has just gone to strange,
Steve,
scary places.
Steve, you know the
what's their lead singer's name?
Who?
Of the Misfits.
Not
Danzig.
I was going to say Glenn Danzig.
The only reason we know anything about Jim is because it came on before Transformers.
Was it before or after?
It was one of those.
My middle initial is E, okay? You try growing up in the 80s with that.
who were the ones that had the other band that came into it? That they had the dude as the lead singer?
Oh, God, I'm going to the gym wiki right now.
I remember that his name was Riot or something.
Okay. Yeah, I really don't know, dude.
And
The Stingers. Rory Riot Lillowen.
Oh, Lillowen. There's a handle. Were they from Britain?
Probably.
Were they like Britpop?
I'm not reading the entire intro. I'll do that later.
Oh, man.
He'll do that after the podcast.
Yeah, he's going to go back and soak up all the episode guides, then head to Walmart tomorrow and buy the complete series.
Is Walmart open 24 hours?
No. Why wait till tomorrow? Let's do it now. I think you still got 4 minutes before they close, John.
Yeah. I'm just going to play some more Final Fantasy. Actually, no, and I'm going to probably instead play a game that I'm sure somebody else is going to talk about now in a minute.
Yeah, so. Most likely. So Final Fantasy 13-2, you'd say thumbs up?
I'd say thumbs in the middle.
Thumbs in the middle, okay.
It's nowhere near, you know, the best that series can do, but after the misstep that was 13 and 14, it's definitely a step in the right direction.
Right on. I can dig it. I read one review for it, and I don't remember what one it was. It was one of the site's reviews. They basically called the entire game an apology for Final Fantasy 13.
And I didn't think 13 was horrible. It was just, it was sloppy. You know, it was arrogant is what it was.
Yeah, that's a word I'd use.
Figuring people were going to buy it, or people were going to love it just because of the name.
What really kind of pisses me off, and this goes back to, you know, our ages-old, episodes-long argument about what is wrong with video game journalism.
Yeah.
13-2, I've seen 8s, I've seen a 7, I think there was even like a 4 or a 5 from one site.
That was Edge Man.
Yeah,
actually.
But like everybody pretty much universally has been saying at least that it's an improvement on 13. But then you go back and you look at the Metacritic averages for Final Fantasy 13 versus 13-2. And all of these guys are saying pretty much universally that it's an apology for, or it's an improvement on, or whatever. But
a game that was scoring 9s.
Yeah, a game that was scoring high 8s and 9s.
Yeah.
Like, again, okay, see, you cannot look at me and tell me that hype does not score a game. Like, the hype over 13 is obviously what scored it, and the post-release fallout is obviously what's affecting the scores for 13-2.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the highest caliber of bullshit imaginable. You know? It's not like a movie where you walk into, like, Star Wars Episode 1, and everybody's so pumped to see it on release night, and then the day after, you can sense that deflated air amongst everybody, you know? Like none of the reviews were positive, and everybody walking out was disappointed, and you had this whole downtrodden, like, all the fans were kind of moping and crying in their Cheerios. Whereas with video games, it seems like they ride the hype until months afterwards. And it just frustrates me. Just an observation.
Well, if that frustrates you, maybe a little Final Fantasy 13 too will lift your spirits.
I have high hopes for it. I think it looks great, and I really enjoyed the demo. Unfortunately, I'm not the fan of the combat system that you are, especially after Final Fantasy 12, which I adored. But
you've got to accept the fact that they will never, ever, ever recapture that lightning in a bottle.
No, because, and this is...
12 was a perfect storm.
This is also... It goes against, it flies in the face of current Japanese game publishing culture, which is do not give the fans anything that they want, ever, period, full stop. That seems to be the general philosophy in the Japanese gaming industry right now. You know, don't ever give in to fan demands. Just throw...
Especially if you work for Capcom.
Yeah, or, well, you know, Capcom, Konami, or Square Enix. What you have to do is you have to fly in the face of what the fans want and call it artistic integrity. Yeah. You know, it's just, to me, it boggles the mind. It's freaking stupid. It'd be like releasing, you know, Call of Duty 5 tomorrow as a isometric shooter, you know, twin stick analog shooter. You know, it makes no sense.
It makes all the sense in the world. But Smash TV.
Okay.
Only with mustaches and terrorism.
Oh, God. Again with the dark places. What have you been playing, Kev?
Let's see. Well, of course, I've been playing Skyrim.
Yay!
Actually, I've been watching my brother play a lot of Skyrim.
Okay.
When are we going to get to the Fallout on Skyrim?
What's that?
When are we going to get to the Fallout on Skyrim?
It has already begun, my friend. It has already begun. Yeah, and it pisses me off to no end. But it has already begun. Anyway, continue, Kev.
Okay. So, I've been watching him play an awful lot, and something really cool happened the other night. He ran into his first Dragon Priest.
Nice!
He's a level 11, okay, for one thing, and a mage. And basically, we spent the night trying to buff him as much as possible so we could take out this Dragon Priest.
Was it Kenosis or whatever, the guy?
It's the guy up next to the sky. I think it's one of the altars, anyway, where the dragon
Yeah, there, yeah, that's the one, I think.
So he ended up, finally, he managed to take him down, but only by wedging the Dragon Priest on the side of the cliff in between some rocks. So every time he tried to shoot at him, he was hitting the cliff face.
Ah, nice.
And my brother was able to take him out from the top.
Did I tell you how I beat him?
It was pretty sweet. How's that?
I had a save right as I was fighting him, like immediately before the lid flew off the coffin and he jumped out. And right. I just hit him with a Wabbajack, and if it didn't work, I'd reload and hit him with it again until he exploded into a shower of gold coins.
That's deadly, dude. That's deadly. So that was a lot of fun. I beat my very first match of Elder Scrolls Omens on the iPad.
What is this?
It's a devilishly difficult board game.
Elder Scrolls Omens?
Yeah, I think I talked about it last week, actually.
You did?
It's by Fantasy Flight, and it's kind of Arkham Horror Light, I guess.
But it's actually an Elder Scrolls game?
No, not Elder Scrolls. What am I talking about? Yes, it's called Elder Scrolls Omens.
Is it like Elder Scrolls, Elder Scrolls? Like?
No, it's like Arkham Asylum. Not Arkham Asylum. I can't talk.
Arkham Horror.
I've turned into Jack Black in that episode of Community.
But is it, like, I hear Elder Scrolls and I immediately think, you know, the Elder Scrolls, Oblivion, Morrowind, Skyrim.
Sorry, Elder Signs, not Elder
you
Scrolls.
You son of a bitch!
I can't believe I made that mistake. You know why? I'm thinking about Skyrim all the time.
Well, that makes sense. Speaking of which, I want my copy of Skyrim back.
You'll get it back when you're good, when I'm good and ready. No, you will get it back, and I'll buy it myself.
Yeah, whatever, whenever. I don't care.
So, yeah, Elder Signs Omens, awesome game.
Cool.
I'm also still playing Minecraft Pocket Edition, which is really starting to get on my nerves, actually, because you can't craft in it, there's no way for you to transport water.
That is kind of dumb.
So, like, I'm building this little underground temple thing, and I really want some water, you know, coming down. So I've got to find a water source on the surface and then try to canal it there, which is impossible. Anyway, first world problem.
Just the things you have to deal with.
Yeah, that's all. There's two other games that I played. A Bobo's Big Adventure.
Good lord.
Join us.
It's awesome, Steve. It's awesome.
Convert now or fall forever.
I played it online, just the online version, and I just downloaded it tonight, the actual download.
The actual crappy sprite swap of Double Dragon that everybody's going crazy over.
Yeah, so I'm gonna play through it.
Okay. Have fun with that.
And, of course, I tried out the Reckoning Kingdom of Amalur demo, woo! Which I'm going to leave to you to talk about, because I know you're going to talk about it.
Yes, I am.
But, boy, do I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Yeah, a lot of fun.
That it?
That is it for me, sir.
What did I play? God. I am once again back in the icy clutches of Dark Souls.
Nice.
And
I noticed that actually on your Facebook account.
That I've been high on Dark Souls again?
Yeah.
I just, man, it's... I've never...
There's no shame in it.
What's that?
There's
definitely no shame. I'm not ashamed at all, but I just, you know, I was kind of... I had fired up Skyrim a few nights, and I was playing, and I was just kind of like, I felt like I was grinding a little. You know, I just felt like I was just kind of... You know, like, my heart wasn't in it, I guess was the word. You know, I was sitting down and I was just moving from place to place and I was dinging a few quests and I was just kind of like...
Going through the
yeah,
motions.
I was like, man, I just... Yeah. I'm doing this right now because I feel like I have to.
Yeah, I feel like that whenever I'm going through a dungeon.
Yeah.
You know, and I see an urn and I'm like, oh God, do I really want to search that urn? I know what's going to be in there.
It's going to be a gold coin and a healing potion.
Yeah, and I know there's going to be 30 of these in this dungeon.
But no, it's not even, you know, like that I dislike Skyrim or that I'm getting sick of Skyrim. It's just, I guess I was in the mood for a change of pace, I think was what I was after. You know, I was in the mood to just kind of play something a little different. I was just in the mood to play something that wasn't Skyrim for a night or two, you know? And I wound up just really diving head and feet first back into Dark Souls, which, I mean, was my number two game last year, and still just such a phenomenally awesome game. And I realized that even after 80 or 85 hours of gameplay, I haven't seen anything in this game world. You know, like, I went down through one of the levels that I had been through a few times. Like, I had done some stuff there, good old Blighttown, which... Anyone who's familiar with Blighttown will groan at. But at the base of Blighttown is this hidden entranceway to a place called the Great Hollow, which is this just gigantic hollow tree trunk that you're going down the inside of on branches and, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's really quiet and really somber. And then you get to the bottom of it and there's an opening. You come out on like a little sandbar in a vast lake. And it is drop-dead beautiful. And when you look around... You realize that this tree trunk that you came down is just one of about 1,000 of them in this area that are all coming down into this water. And I mean, now you can't get to all of them, but it looks so cool and it's so beautifully designed. Like it's gorgeous. And you're just like, my God, like the amount of just artistry and craft that went into putting this game together is staggering. You know, like, how much thought went into this level? Like, you know, like, you think nothing of it coming down this giant hollowed-out tree, and then when you come out at the bottom, you're just like, this is just one small piece of this big, moody, super atmospheric world. And, I mean, and this sandbar, then it was like, well, there was a six-headed hydra there that I had to kill, which was pretty monstrous. But once you kill him, like, the whole area is quiet except for this beautiful music. And then you get to the end of it, there's this giant stone statue of a dragon. And as you approach, the thing's wings open up and it starts talking to you. And it's just like, holy shit, this is amazing. And of course, then I had to backtrack through this level, back up through the Great Hollow, back through Blighttown and the depths, then back to Firelink Shrine so that I could be in a safe zone again. So it was like, there was a lot of backtracking there, but man, it was just such an incredible, just an incredible journey. Not to sound cheesy, but that's what it felt like. It was, it felt like this big opus, you know? And this is just discovering one new little region in the game. There's just so much more to go. Like, I still have so much to see and so much to do in the game that I haven't even come close to touching. And it just, it makes me want to dive right back in again.
It might be something, this game might be the thing to give to Skyrim addicts.
It could be, and I mean, like, you know, a lot of people are turned off by the difficulty and stuff like that. Like, I mean, I've hammered it time and again. I did the same thing with Demon's Souls. It was like beating my head off a wall trying to tell people, these games are not difficult. They are challenging, they will test you, but they are not difficult. You just have to learn the rules and play along, and you will be fine. If you don't, the game will lube something sharp and pointy and shove it up your ass. But, you know, like, if you do get into that groove, when you find that rhythm, these are the most rewarding freaking games of this generation, man. You know, like, I mean, as awesome as it is to discover new stuff in Skyrim and to find new territories and to delve into that next dungeon, once you've seen all the cities and you've played 100 hours of it and you've gotten a feel for all the dungeons and stuff, you know, like, there are no real surprises anymore. It's like, you know what's around every corner, you know? And Oblivion had the same problem. I mean, once you had the Oblivion map uncovered, it was just kind of like, yeah, anyway, I'm in a forest. Tromp, 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 you know?
Now, in Skyrim's defense, it does take over 100 hours to get to
It does, and I mean, I'm not trying to knock Skyrim. Skyrim was the best game of last year, and I still totally 100% feel very strongly about that. But the thing about Dark Souls is it's just, you never really know what's coming. And then you see this new area or whatever, and it's just so gorgeous or so goddamn bone-chilling, and it's just like, wow. You know, everything, every new thing that you see is just a stunner. You know?
Yeah.
And it feels so great. I also did get the retail version of Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning. So far, it's awesome.
Coincidence. I have that too.
Hey! What a quinky-dink.
Yeah.
So far, I'm about three and a half hours in. I spent some time with it last night before I fell asleep, with a controller in my hand, an hour or two before work this morning, and then this evening after supper, I fired it up and played it pretty much right up till now. And I'm loving it, man. I'm really loving it. I don't remember exactly how I described it on the Facebook group or on our Facebook page, but...
I remember how you described
it. It's a hint of Fable, a drop of Oblivion, a little pinch of WoW, and a big-ass cup of kick-ass. You just kind of stir it all together, dump it out, and you get Reckoning. It's, you know, it's got that open-world feel to it, but the area isn't, like, the areas are not as intimidating, I guess, as Oblivion or Skyrim. You know, you don't have that sense of, where the hell do I go now, kind of thing, you know? It's got more closed-in maps and stuff. The maps and stuff are closer to Fable, the original Fable, or even, like, Fable 2, Fable 3, but not to the same extent. It does feel more connected. It does feel more like an open world, but at the same time, like you do have more of a sense of region and more of a sense of place and more of a sense of what you got to do next. You know, it's a little easier to navigate, I guess, is the thing.
Yeah.
But on top of that, like the quest structure and stuff is pulled right out of WoW. Like everywhere you go, you're picking up quests and stuff. You know, you're just talking to every random passerby with an exclamation mark over their head. You know, that kind of thing. So I guess some people might call that a little bit derivative, but I think it's awesome. I think it's really great how it's put together. It's a bit more user friendly. It's a bit less involving, I guess, than Skyrim or Oblivion. Because I mean, you know, those games, the Elder Scrolls games, Fallout, the Bethesda Fallout stuff. That's really kind of engineered to cater to a specific crowd. That's like for people like us who like deep Western RPGs, you know? But Reckoning, I think, is there's a lot there that'll cater to that crowd, but there's also, you know, the more casual, more accessible stuff as well, and then on top of that, there's like the loot gathering and all that. Like, there's so many weapon drops and item drops and stuff like that. Like, I've been swapping out a fair bit. Like, I think I've had like 3 or 4 swords already that I've used, and I redeemed my online code and got my Mass Effect 3 armor, which was badass, you know?
Okay.
It's been a lot of fun so far. I haven't done much storyline-wise, and that's where it really kind of dials into Oblivion's DNA and Skyrim's DNA, is the fact that, you know, I'm 4 hours in and haven't touched the main storyline, you know? I've just been exploring, and I've only found one small town that looks like something out of Fable, or maybe like the Blood Elf starting area in World of Warcraft. But it's been really, really cool. And the artistry of it is fantastic. I mean, I know Todd McFarlane's taken his knocks in the last decade or so, but I think the art design in the game is beautiful. I think it looks really, really nice. You know, it's that nice, happy medium between Fable's kind of comic book look and a more realistic style, like a more realistic tone. So it doesn't look quite, you know, Skyrim real. It does have a bit more of an art flair. But at the same time, it's not as out-and-out cartoony as something like Fable or World of Warcraft, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just so cool. And the visuals, like the landscapes look really nice. There's a real sense of artistry there. And even
I dug the story, man. The setup, like, I just played the demo, but the setup was really cool.
The setup was really cool. And, man, when you start getting out and talking to people and hearing all this, like, the lore, there's a lot of lore, even this early on. And every character you talk to, you can ask them about. It's almost like Shadowrun on Super Nintendo. You get, like, a checklist of stuff you can ask them about. And, like, there's so much depth, and every character has their own voice, and they have their own opinion on stuff. And, like, R.A. Salvatore was the story lead, the head writer, and all that kind of stuff. And, you can really see, I think we said it last week when we were talking about the demo, but you can really see the influence of an experienced author. You know, mm-hmm. it's really kind of the game. It all feels, you know, with Skyrim, you're playing, you're thumbing through books and stuff like that, and it's a little more abstract. Like, you know, like, all this stuff is cool, it's all lore, it's all flavor text and stuff, but it feels ancillary to the main experience. Whereas with Reckoning, it's all pushed front and center. Like, with Reckoning, like, it is all about really getting, like, making you feel like you're a part of this big world full of history and goings-on and stuff like this. Like, it's really cool that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really impressed so far. Like, right now, it's my first, you know, must-have of 2012. Like, I highly recommend it to anybody who's even remotely a fan of RPGs. And then on top of that, well, there's the awesome combat system that we talked about last week that feels more like something out of Prince of Persia or God of War than, you know, your typical RPG. And it does things, I'm going to say it right now, it does things better than any of the Elder Scrolls games did in terms of combat.
Yeah.
Have you seen any of the kill animations in it?
The fate something, you get your fate meter built up and you can pretty much kick them in whenever you want. You unravel your enemy's threads of fate. It's pretty cool. And even like the first time you do it, there's a character there, he's a fate weaver is what he's called. He's one of these guys, he's one of these fortune tellers that uses destiny cards, and when he sees you do it, he flips out. You know, it's like, this shouldn't be possible, how can you do this? What are you? You know, it's...
That was really cool.
Really, really cool, man. Really cool. And it gives you like, you've got that blank slate character, you know, you've got that cipher, but at the same time, they really make you feel like you're a part of what's going on, you know?
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Very impressive. I think that's about all I played. I think. I'm sure it was probably something else, but I don't remember what.
Okay.
I downloaded the Syndicate demo, but I haven't tried it yet.
Oh, there's a demo?
Yeah, it's a co-op demo, apparently.
Okay.
So, guys, download the Syndicate co-op demo for PS3. Let's get it on.
Apparently, don't play it like a first-person shooter.
That's what I'm told. I'm told if you try to play it like a first-person shooter, it will end you very quickly.
Oh, yeah?
That was the other game I played. Damn. Speaking of Syndicate, Starbreeze, the guys who created Syndicate, did the original Darkness. And I did go back, fire that up, and play about 2.5 or 3 hours of it just for nostalgia's sake. I still love that game. Yeah, it's a great, like, I mean, not just good, it's a great first-person shooter. And I think, personally, and I know I'm going to be branded as an insane, maniac, crazy person for this one, I think it did a better job with storyline and just feeling different from every other shooter than BioShock did.
Yeah.
I honestly do. I think it just had such a unique feel. It had such a really cool, like, those little hub worlds that you could roam around and talk to NPCs, and then, you know, like, going to your girlfriend's apartment, you could sit down and watch the entirety of To Kill a Mockingbird with her, you know?
It was really
immersive, man. It was just so immersive.
I loved how, like, when you'd go into, like, you know, you'd go into the World War One.
Oh, when you were in hell? Yeah.
And not have a clue where you were supposed to be or what you were doing, really.
Yeah, and every now and again some crazy crucified cyber steampunk thing would pop up and scream at you.
Yeah. That's one of the things I loved about that game, is that it suddenly threw you for a loop.
Yeah.
It made you disoriented.
And it really, you know, felt different for a first-person shooter. Like, it didn't feel like any other first-person shooter I've played before or since.
Yeah.
The Darkness 2 demo, unfortunately, I was a little disappointed with.
Oh, yeah? I haven't tried that out.
It was okay. Like, it wasn't bad, but it didn't have that same vibe at all that the first one had. The first one almost had, like, you know, this gothic vibe to it, whereas the second one was just all-out chaos. You know? I was a little let down there.
Yeah, that's too bad.
They've done the COD group.
Not even that. I don't think it even, like, it was designed to appeal to the COD group so much as I think they took a few more pages from Bioshock's book. And I gotta say, like, I'm definitely interested in it. It looks gorgeous. I mean, the sequel looks fantastic. It's got this almost, like, comic book shaded look to it. And it looks great. But, and, like, controls are good, it's smooth, the shooting feels good and stuff like that, but it just kinda, just too chaotic, too in your face, and I got a feeling, I'm hoping I'm going to be proved wrong when the game comes out early next month, or early this month, but I think, like, the hub worlds and stuff like that are all gone. I think it's just more of a level-by-level shooter now.
And right. That would be,
that's just really sad.
Yeah.
That really makes me sad. It makes me feel bad inside, you know? Makes my soul cry a little bit. When you kind of neuter one of the most unique shooters of this generation.
Yeah, when you take something great that was a game and release a sequel without it.
Yeah. You know, exactly. Why even bother? Why waste your time?
Yeah.
No one's going to buy it anyway. It's been so long since the first one came out. Why bother?
That's true.
I guess we shall move on to news, will we?
Let's do the news.
Let's do the news. Now it's time for the news. Who's going to kick it off?
Is John still here?
John is still
okay.
Here.
News. What's the biggest news we've got for this week?
Oh, my goodness. THQ?
THQ? Okay, here we go. There have been more layoffs at THQ.
Dun, dun, dun.
As NASDAQ, which are the guys who, you know, supervise stock market and all that kind of crap, has threatened stock delisting if they can't get their stock values above $1 a share and keep them there for at least 10 days. I don't know how easy that's going to be. Maybe when Darksiders 2 comes out. CEO Brian Farrell, no relation to the Brian Farrell you and I know, Kev, will take a 50% pay cut, and over 240 administrative employees have been excised from the company. No studios have been affected.
So you think sinking ship or trimming the fat?
I sincerely hope it's trimming the fat. I sincerely hope that they're just trying to lean out their, you know, their business profile and stuff. I really do think that in 2000, I think it was in 2007 or 2008 when they went acquisition crazy, they bought all these studios. They came out, you know, nothing but love for Bilson, but he came out saying that he was going to turn it all into they were going to be a powerhouse AAA publisher. They were going after EA and Ubisoft and Activision. You know, they were going to be up there with the big guns. They had all these new franchises they wanted to push. I think they just tried to do too much too fast. And the problem, of course, with trying to do too much too fast is if you come out with a product that's not of interest to the masses, then it's going to blow up in your face. You know,
see Red Faction.
Well, Red Faction is a good example, even though Red Faction Armageddon was a goddamn excellent game. But I'm thinking more, you know, Homefront is a prime example.
Yeah, they took a ding on Homefront. There was the U-Draw debacle.
Yeah, U-Draw was just a bad scene all around.
to my understanding, I think they still do pretty well with the UFC and WWE titles.
Well, now the second UFC was a bit of a letdown too. 2010 apparently didn't sell what it was supposed to. Like, didn't meet projections or anything either. But I think part of that was it came too fast on 2009. You know?
Yeah.
It did. And then while the WWF stuff, we all know what's happening there. It's just not the sport that it used to be in the wake of UFC. I mean, a lot of the fan bases have splintered off into other stuff, you know. It's just the hardcore wrestling fanatics are still at it, and I'm sure they all want to powerbomb me or suplex me now for saying that. But, guys, face it. It's not what it was 5 years ago. You know? I think that's the most of it. I think it's just, you know, they hitched their cash to the wrong wagons. What's next?
Well, I got something here. Rift, the awesome MMO.
It is awesome.
I haven't played it, but I watched lots of videos.
I played. It's good.
It's gone free to play up to level 20.
Following the WoW model.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I mean, they followed WoW with everything else. They might as well start doing it with their play model.
I'd say it's great if it gets more gamers trying it out. Power to
I really, really dug what I played of it, I gotta say.
Yeah, I mean, if I had a machine that could run it, now that I know it's free to play up to level 20, I would probably download it and try it out.
I just bought it because I saw a cheap collector's edition.
We all know you and your collector's edition. It's like crack.
It comes in a shiny case, and it has like a soundtrack or something in there, and a hardcover art book. Hardcover!
I understand that completely.
Hey, I got the real estate for it. Why not?
Yes. You got the room for it? So that's pretty neat.
That is cool.
I think it's they're calling it like an endless trial to level 70.
Yeah, Rift Lite or something like that?
Rift Lite, yeah, that's what they're calling it. Yeah.
Anything, Mr. Mercer?
In news that warms the cockles of my icy heart, Square Enix is expensive, read awesome, PlayArt's Kai line of figures is seeing the addition of Sam Gideon and Victor Zaitsev from the fast-paced shooter Vanquish.
Hell according yeah!
According to Platinum Games designer Kenji Arai, they've captured every little detail on the ARS suit. They even brought to life many of the little details on the inner suit as well. So far, these are just unpainted prototypes, but that won't stop me from stealing my wife's credit card this evening.
You know what? I will have a Sam Gideon. I hope he comes with a smoke.
How much detail do they put into those things?
Oh, they are gorgeous, man.
Because I'm hoping, you know, yeah, he'll come with a little smoke and you'll be able to lift the faceplate on the helmet.
You may not be able to do the faceplate, but he might come with alternate head sculpts.
Yeah, because that helmet was pretty
deep.
Crazy,
yeah,
when that thing
I think there was a bit of Stargate syndrome on the go with that one. I think there was some folding cheating.
Yeah.
But yeah, that I'm definitely down for a Vanquish action figure.
Hopefully it comes with like a couple of those big ass guns.
I think the coolest thing to do would be to give him like as a pack in, put in President Crazy Bitch.
Oh, President Crazy!
Just have her in the background on a TV screen or something.
Joan Allen.
In other out of Japan news, I guess. Dragon's Dogma, Capcom's online pseudo co-op open world medieval hack and slasher, will be launching in North America on May 22nd. Which excites me greatly.
Mm.
It's got a pretty good team. It's, I think that the guys behind Lost Planet 2, and Resident Evil 4, I think, are involved or something. So, you know, could be good.
It looks
great.
It
does look fantastic. The game mechanics look
really
cool.
Dragons are in this year.
Dragons are definitely in this year. After Skyrim, especially.
Oh, yeah.
But even
yeah.
The cover art was really cool looking. What's even more exciting to, I guess, some people, this will be the Zone of the Enders of 2012, because it comes with a download code for early access to a Resident Evil 6 demo.
Yeah.
I believe the Xbox people will be able to get it in July, and then PlayStation 3 guys get it in September. which is kind of a drag, but hey, you know, I'm not going to complain.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the first print copies of the game, now I don't know if this is just for Japan or if it's for Japan and North America, but I still thought it's really freaking cool, will include Dragon's Dogma Beginnings, a short story written by Ryo Mizuno, who whose name most people probably wouldn't recognize, but we know it because we're old school anime geeks, one of the creators of Record of Lodoss War.
Awesome.
Which was, without doubt, the single coolest fantasy anime ever created. And one of the coolest fantasy stories, in my opinion, ever created. You know, if you ever wanted to see Dungeons & Dragons brought to life as a cartoon, that was the only way to do it. Without watching that...
Eat it, Slayers.
Yeah, without watching that shitty 80s cartoon. So, here you go. Novel written by him, included with the game.
Very nice.
I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of novel tie-ins to video games, Darksiders, The Abomination Vault, a series prequel that takes place a millennia before the opening credits of the first game. Me, I'm hoping for a buddy cop-style romp starring War and Death.
Okay.
Apparently, Random House are publishing. Ari Marmel, who got his start with... writing RPG scenarios for White Wolf and Wizards of the Coast, is writing the novel, and it launches with Darksiders 2 later this year, which I'm hoping means the summer.
I heard May.
For the game, that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I've heard May. Which means May is going to be an awesome month again. With Dragon's Dogma and possibly Darksiders.
Oh, man. And my birthday.
And Kev's birthday. And not my birthday. How old are we going to be this year, Kev? I don't remember.
35, Steve.
Are we really?
Yes.
Fuck.
I know. I better get a real job. And house
in the car. That is crazy. I never realized that. Wow.
Time to stop playing video games, I guess.
No, probably not. You got any more news there, Woolrich?
I do. It's official now that Microsoft will not be even announcing a new Xbox in 2012.
And the peasants rejoiced.
Yay!
Woo! Huzzah!
I mean, yeah, we all felt pretty strongly about, you know, not needing another PS3. I do feel almost as strongly about the same thing with the Xbox 360.
Mm-hmm.
The big difference is, you know, Sony hasn't completely bailed on their software like Microsoft has. I don't even want to open that can of worms again. But, you know, like, hey, Microsoft, if you're making games, great. I'm happy. We don't need a new Xbox if you're making games.
No, my son, no, we don't.
What else you got there, John?
Speaking of massive damage,
we were.
PlayStation's Danny Kazaroy is getting a promotion. The official word has come down from Sony that Mr. Hiroi, longtime champion of the PlayStation brand, will be taking over as president and CEO of Sony Corporation when Sir Howard Stringer steps down this April. The former head of Sony's PlayStation division, Hiroi, has been credited with running one of Sony's few profitable operations, the PlayStation brand having clawed its way back to the console market, both in terms of market share and profitability following a troubled launch. Stringer and Sony shareholders will be hoping that he can do the same for the company at large, which has struggled in recent years thanks to a lack of innovation and the punishing strength of the yen relative to lack of innovation. Didn't they make Blu-ray?
Oh, my.
I mean,
people
like
just people love to hate Sony, don't they? Lack of innovation. Jesus.
The only thing I'm really hoping from this is that Kaz doesn't feel that Ridge Racer itch anytime in the immediate future.
Check out our new Sony Bravia television, the Ridge Racer. Comes complete.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're doing okay with, you know, Blu-ray and the Bravia line of
television. Yeah, which is generally regarded as one of the better flat panel televisions on the market, you know, like...
Yeah.
Oh, and the fact that they were, like, early adopters and early pioneers of the whole 3D and movie theaters racket, and... Wow. Wow. Like, lack of innovation. Okay. Wow. I don't understand. Anyway. Kaz, good luck. You got an awfully large uphill battle considering everybody in the world thinks Sony as a company is a total, utter failure. We wish you all the best. If you need groupies, give us a call. We'll break out our pom-poms.
And dude, didn't you just hear what I said? The guy he's replacing was a knight.
Sir Howard Stringer, yeah, there we go. I actually have a lot of respect for Stringer. I think he set me, something has to do with his health or something, I believe. He's just in failing health.
Mm.
So, you know, all the best to outgoing Mr. Stringer, Sir Stringer, and all the best to Kaz. Good luck, boys.
Mm.
You'll need it.
I was browsing some used Blu-rays today and found a HD DVD amongst them.
Oh, mercy. Where did?
Yeah, it was pretty
funny.
What
was this?
It was at Fred's Records.
Oh, God. They have used Blu-rays at Fred's?
I have a very, very limited selection.
Oh, well, that sucks.
Yeah.
That does suck. Have either of you guys got anything left?
I do, actually.
Oh, okay.
This week in Minecraft.
Hey!
Well, actually, it's not this week. I think this news is probably about 2 weeks old.
Boo.
But we haven't talked
about
it. Okay! So a Minecraft, a racial slur ended up in Minecraft by accident, I'm assuming.
What kind of racial slur was it?
I'm not even going to mention it. We're not going to go there. But it was in the title kind of menu screen.
Right up front?
Right up front, yeah. Only if you switched your language to... I don't even remember the name of the language.
It was Afrikaans.
Afrikaans, yeah. If you change your language to that, then this racial slur would show up at the beginning. apparently it's been taken care of now. At first they said that it wasn't going to be taken care of. I know. Until the next update, but it's been taken care of.
I'm just wondering if the bad guys from Lethal Weapon 2 were responsible.
Who is the dickhead now, hey?
See, they have so many translators who are doing it. You know, basically volunteer translators. And I guess it just happens when you got that many people working
on it. That many volunteers, someone is bound to try to, like, stick a monkey wrench in it, right? Someone's bound to be the fly in the ointment. I just saw a screen cap of it.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty hilarious. It's pretty hilarious, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, if anybody does want to see it, we're not going to repeat it because we have class. Which is probably the funniest thing that's been said online. But no, yeah, you can just go to Google and type in Minecraft racial slur. You'll find it.
You'll find it, yeah, you'll find it. Anyway, so luckily that's been taken care of. And of course, the new update for Pocket Edition is coming up, I think, this week.
Yeah? Does it finally add survival mode and stuff, or no?
No, this is the one that we talked about before that was adding in...
hooks for survival mode, yeah.
For survival mode, yeah. And also fences and doors.
Yay!
I'm excited.
I'm going to finish things off with the best bit of news I got this week. All Dragon right. Age Dawn of the Seeker hits DVD and Blu-ray this spring and looks surprisingly awesome.
Cool.
I'm really impressed. It's a joint between Funimation and BioWare. And Funimation being like the only guys in North America, I think, who can still make a profit on Japanese animation. And it's got that, like, that kind of anime-style art going on. And I feared, you know, like, I just had memories immediately of Dead Space and Dante's Inferno, which were just these really hacked together, you know, pretty average.
Don't forget Dragonlance.
Oh, well, no, Dragonlance is a different... That's even another story entirely. But no, you know, like, just video game tie-ins that were, like, quick marketing grabs that were thrown out on the market around the same time as the game launches. And the animation, while good, was pretty stock. And, you know, like, they weren't what I'd call quality, unique products, whereas this really has an awesome, unique look to it. It almost looks like the same kind of animation technique that they use for Appleseed.
So I was just about to mention that, actually.
Like the polygon.
I'm definitely getting an Appleseed vibe from it.
Yeah. It looks really, really cool. It looks really, really, like, kinetic and stuff. Really nice, smooth movement. Lots of, like, CG use and stuff. It's pretty gory from what I've seen. The battle scenes are pretty pretty brutal. And it does actually have a story written by the creative team, written by, like, the Dragon Age creative team and stuff, focusing on the character Cassandra, which all the hardcore Dragon Age nerds will know was the chick who was interrogating Varric, the dwarf thief in Dragon Age 2. So she plays a pretty pivotal role in Dragon Age 2 in terms of, like, she's kind of the witness to the story. So I'm really looking forward to see what they do with it. And it looks great. The animation looks awesome. As long as it's not, you know, just fight scene exposition, fight scene exposition, fight scene exposition credits, I'll be really pleased, you know?
Right. Now, as somebody who, like, I haven't played the second Dragon Age.
Okay, you should.
Should I play it before watching the
movie? I think it kind of stands on its own because it's kind of Cassandra's backstory, I think. It takes place before Dragon Age 2. It's how she becomes a member of the Seekers or whatever. The Seekers being, I don't know if you remember your Dragon Age lore, but you had the Chantry and the Templars. And the Chantry were almost like the religious sect. They were almost like, you know, like they were magic users, but they were more, they served under, I can't remember what was her name, Andraste, the goddess Andraste, and all this kind of stuff. So they were more, they kind of governed the Templars. The Templars kind of worked under them, and then the Templars regulated all the mages. Who use, like, you know, the more traditional magical powers kind of thing. And what the Seekers are kind of the Inquisition arm of the Chantry. So they kind of serve as, like, the elite, you know, special forces of the Chantry, like the actual militaristic arm of the Chantry. So, they're pretty cool characters and stuff. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be pretty fantastic.
Cool, man. Yeah.
So I think that's it for our news, is it? Or does John, do you have anything left?
Nope, I am
dry. Okay, we're dry. That's it for news. We got no more news. I'm sure there has been more news, but, you know, that's all we really cared to talk about. except for this big nugget, which, you know, I'm gonna forgo an ambush topic this week unless we have time to throw one in at the end. And this is something I got to talk about because it's really kind of getting my goat. It was announced...
It's grinding your gears?
Oh, it's grinding my gears. It's, you know, it's a pain in my ass. Last week, rumors started circulating that the Xbox Next or Xbox 720 or Xbox
Loop
or Xbox Infinite or Xbox Cloud or Xbox Messiah or whatever the hell, the Xbox Second Coming of Jesus, whatever it's going to be called, is not going to play secondhand product. So, no used games will function. Basically, you get a game, it comes with a code, you punch the code in, it's registered to that console serial number associated with that live account, and that's it. It's locked.
Man, that's bogus.
I'm not as, like, in that regard, I think what pisses me off more is the reaction to it than you know, like, the general outcry.
Those are fascist.
I just... Okay, who is really, you know, who's really making the money at the end of the day on used game sales?
GameStop.
GameStop, EB Games, whatever, the Evil Empire, whatever you want to call them. You know, in Canada, EB Games, in the US, GameStop.
Yeah.
They cleared, what was their profit last year? $6 billion in 2011? Which was more than Activision and EA, who were the two biggest third-party publishers, two biggest publishers in the game racket, combined.
Wow.
I just... Okay. 2 points to Microsoft. One, the Xbox has been hacked to shit, and has been for a while, and there is considerably more piracy on it than there is on PlayStation 3. It's just the nature of people who play Xbox 360 games, I think. You know, like, the nature of the fan base. They love hacking their Xboxers. And there is a lot of piracy on the system. There is. There's no way around it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. There are people out there with JTAG or whatever the hell systems, and they're playing burn games. So, yeah. Number one, it combats the burns. I'm sure eventually, like, within the first 2 or 3 years of the console's lifespan, there will be a way to circumvent it. I'm sure that people will... Those ingenious little hacker dudes will find a way to bypass this particular security mechanism and stuff like that, and the piracy will continue. However, for companies like GameStop, you know, I see it as being a very, very bad thing.
Oh, it's game over for them.
And you know what? F them. That's my attitude. I mean, I don't care. You know, if that means that I got to go to Walmart to buy my games, you know what? I'm cool with that because at least, you know, when I'm going to Walmart, when I'm going to a faceless mega corporation, I don't have some shithead with mega hole gel in his hair telling me how awesome X game is and asking me if I want to pre-order this or pre-sell this or trade in games for that or buy an extended game warranty or, you know, I go to Walmart, I ask for a game out of the cabinet, I pay for it, I walk out, I'm happy.
Yeah.
You know? I go to GameStop, I feel like I'm being molested. And I'm cool with that. Yeah. You know what? GameStop, go away. I hate you. On top of that, your practices are amoral. They are done without conscience. I mean, you know, you're paying out pennies for a game that you're going to sell for $2 to $5 less than new retail price, and not a dime of that money goes to the guys who made the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can say the argument all you want. This is the same argument that popped up in the whole piracy debate. Oh, well, someone bought it already, so that's all. They already made their money off it. It's like, yes, they did make their money off of it, but they didn't make their money off the other copy of that game that you would have bought. You know, and it's, to me, it's just, it's a situation where you've got one huge company that's basically feeding off of creative minds, like, you know, companies who are putting, I mean, yeah, don't weep for Microsoft or Sony or Nintendo. They've all got billions or whatever. You know, that's neither here nor there. That's beside the point. These guys put a fortune into these machines. You know, the Xbox 360, the PS3, the Wii, they didn't just, you know, they weren't just crapped out overnight. Those machines cost these people a fortune. Those machines made or break, would make or break several people within those companies. You know, if the PlayStation 3 was the colossal failure that people kind of talked of it as in the first year, Kaz Hirai wouldn't be the CEO of Sony right now. He'd be out of a job. You know, he'd be broke. And that's all there is to it. You know, like, you can say that you're only robbing from a faceless corporation or whatever, but you're not. You're taking stuff from creative minds. You're taking stuff from R&D departments. You're taking stuff from software.
How many people were just laid off from THQ?
Over 240 people just lost their jobs at THQ. Why? Because you guys were too busy buying used copies of Red Faction Armageddon 6 months after the game came out.
Yeah.
You know, which leads me to the next major part of that story, you know, the next major thing. And, like, after this, I'm going to let you guys sound off because I'm going to be too, my blood is going to be boiling after this. About a week ago, it was announced that Kingdoms of Amalur Reckoning would include an online pass, something you had to register your game, you know, and you go onto your PlayStation account or your Xbox Live account, redeem a code, and bam, there you go. This is not a new concept. This concept was with Dragon Age. It was with Mass Effect 2. You know, like, it goes back. It's been around for about 2 years now. This is not a new concept. Those games did not have online functionality, and they still had online passes. It's not new. It's not something that just started. However, the outcrying over it has been ridiculous. People feeling that they're getting ripped off. Getting ripped off for having to redeem an online code.
Well, that's just an extension of using a serial key.
Exactly. It's the same thing. And here we go. It's the same thing. On the official Reckoning forums, there were 48 pages of people bitching, moaning, pissing, whining, threatening boycotts. You know, it's like, okay, if you thought so highly of this game that you went on the official forums and signed up, something like this is going to stop you from buying it?
Yeah.
So, Kurt Schilling, who
is bigger than you.
He's bigger than you. And, okay, this is a guy, to give a bit of background on Kurt Schilling, this is a dude who played professional Major League Baseball, had 38 home runs, named a student, like, decided when he got his fortune, when he made his money, dropped baseball like a bad habit. Just basically said, yep, that's it, I'm retiring, I'm done. You know, I had my run, it was great, it was a laugh, I want to go sit down and play World of Warcraft. This is what he did. He said he sat at home and became a WoW junkie. After a year of sitting on his ass playing World of Warcraft, he decided, you know what? I should be making these games. I got the money. You know, like I love playing this stuff. So why not? So what does the guy do but turn around, invest his own money in starting up a company, starting up 38 Studios, who are the guys who created Reckoning. He had the means, he had the connections, he got together a AAA group of talent. I mean, he got Todd McFarlane, he's got Ari Salvatore, he's got Ken Rolston, who is not as well known, but created a little game that we played a shitload of called Oblivion. You know, so it's, he's got all these guys together. This stuff cost him, not a faceless mega corporation or whatever, it cost him his entire fortune to do.
Mm-hmm.
This was his response, you know? I'm just going to read the response he posted on the forum, because I think it's brilliant. I think it's, you know, like, in terms of, you know, one of their own trying to communicate with him, I mean, this guy is a gamer. This guy created the game he wanted to sit down and play for a couple of hundred hours. Here we go. I was hoping to come in here and start this thread another way, but I can't. Anything other than I didn't know feels better, but is a lie. Believe it or not, in a company of 400 plus, I don't get the nitty-gritty details of everything, and I make mistakes. I did both here, and it's on me. Believe that or not, it's true. Next, I honestly was wondering what the fuss was about when I woke up a bit dazed and jet-lagged to see the thread, and unlike most companies, I didn't check in with PR and marketing folks to see what was going on or if there was an official response. Again, that's totally on me. Now, if you and we both want to go that route, we could, and that would mean I would stop posting. Our community team just left off the ground. But I can't. It's not me. Me making that statement, though, it appears as if the team, our team, is disorganized, and that is not the case. This is squarely on me and something I should have pursued a conversation on a long time ago. That being said, this next part is likely to piss people off, but it's a truth, and it's how I feel. You can argue the merits and effectiveness of it, but right now it's how it's done, and as somebody that's as invested as I am in this company, I stand by what has happened. Day one DLC, to be extremely and vividly clear, is free. 100% totally free to anyone that buys a new copy of Reckoning. Anyone. If you don't buy new games, you buy them used, and in that case, you will have to pay for the day one free DLC content the new copy buyers get for free. It's clear, the intent, right? To promote early adopters, and much more important to me, reward fans and gamers who commit to us with their time and money when it benefits the company. Every single person on the planet could wait and not buy Reckoning. The game would hit the bargain bin at some point, and you could get it cheaper. 38 Studios would likely go away. That's just how business works. We must make a profit to become what we want to become. The only way we do that is to make games you cannot wait to buy. If we do that, and you do that, we want to reward you with some cool free stuff as a thank you. You can totally disagree with this, and I'm sure many do, so we'll agree to disagree. This is not 38 trying to take your money, or EA. This is us rewarding people for helping us. If you disagree due to methodology, okay, but that is our intent. I said earlier I did not know. Truth is, after a day of soul searching, I do remember conversations I was on the cusp of. But I never followed up and didn't pursue them. But damn, if EA and EA Properties doesn't step in and bet on us, it would never have mattered and this game would never have been made. The industry is in a very odd place. The data coming in on used game sales is not saying the things many thought it should or would. But companies are still trying to figure out how to receive dollars spent on games they make when they are bought. Is that wrong? If so, please tell me how. Again, you can argue with methods or process, and you can absolutely bitch and gripe about any day one DLC you're charged for, because I think I agree with many on that. But we are trying to create something here, product and company-wise, and it takes dollars to do that. I said above, but I will restate, this falls squarely on me. It is my responsibility as the leader to know things like this and be aware that it would become an issue. I failed on both accounts. No one else is to blame, but at the same time, there is no nefarious attempt to do anything underhanded here. You get the content, no matter what platform you purchase the game for, or what outlet you buy from, for free.
Nice.
And that pretty much sums it up absolutely perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, like, how can anybody argue with that? How can any douchebag sit down and argue with those sentiments?
Yeah.
You got any thoughts, John?
I hate baseball. Wow. No, man, listen, I am guilty of buying a used game occasionally.
That's not what we're talking about, though. You know, I mean, no. who has bought a used game?
But no, I don't have any problem whatsoever with these online passes. Nope. I really don't. You know, like, when my wife picked up Resistance 3 for me, without knowing, she purchased a used copy due to the Evil Empire's recent policies on
mixing their used and new games together.
On mixing their used, yeah. When we found out, I went back to the store and exchanged it. Went and bought it someplace else. And looking back on that, I believe with Resistance 3, you would have been able to play the game, just not online.
I think they worked it the same way the same way EA did with Medal of Honor and a few of the sports games. You get like a week free trial or something like that before you have to activate your code. And I think Uncharted 3 worked it the same way too.
Yeah, and I have no problem with that. You know, if you've got companies out there that are going to be making billions of dollars, pure profit on selling used games, I think the developers and the publishers have a right to get back some of that money, and have a right to basically have a way there that even if you are buying a used game, you still have to, you know, they still get a cut of that pie.
And this is the thing. I mean, I know it was what's really hilarious about it is, you know, you don't hear anybody complaining about when Epic did it with Gears of War 2, which was the first game to do it. What was it? They called it Project $10 or something like this. You know, you get a map pack and all of this kind of stuff if you went and bought Gears of War 2 new instead of waiting for a used copy. You know, and this is the thing. How else are they supposed to make revenue on a used sale?
Yeah.
And they're not interfering with GameStop's racket then, so they don't have to worry about GameStop threatening them, which, I mean, this is why Microsoft's machine is not going to be blocked for playing used games, because GameStop is going to turn around and say to Microsoft, well, you know what, you can do that, and we won't give your system any shelf space. And when you're looking at the company that made $6 billion in video game sales last year, most software companies can't afford not to have their support. You know? So, I mean, how else are you going to do it? How else are they going to turn a profit on something that they spent millions developing? You know, in most cases, tens of millions. It's just, it's stupid, and the way people react to it just makes me ill. It makes me sick. It's like someone's ripping them off.
Yeah.
Tough titties to the kitty.
The only thing, my only thought on it, like, I completely agree that, you know, the studios need to make their money and, you know, use game sales and blah, 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 blah. The only thing that I don't like about it, and maybe it's because I remember being a kid and getting a new game and going to my buddy's place to play it.
Right? Okay.
And even nowadays, like, you know, if you've got a new game that I wanted to try out and I borrow it and take it home, I won't be able to play it on my system.
Yeah, I agree. That is horseshit.
Right.
That is horseshit.
That's something. It's going to be really tricky how they're going to juggle this kind of stuff, you know? There's so many factors involved.
I even think, you know, even if they approached it like they approached their OSs, like Microsoft approaches Windows and stuff like that, you know, you can install it on three systems or something like that, you know, like similar.
You get so many licenses.
Yeah, like the way Sony does things now with the PSN store, how like you can share data between two systems and stuff like that. But I honestly, like, while I am not morally opposed to the idea of locking games to an individual console, I really am not. I really, you know, if that's what it takes, then that's what it takes. But, again, it's just not going to work. It's just not going to fly, because GameStop, EB Games, they'll never get behind that. Never. And Game, like over in Europe, Game, HMV, those guys all sell used product. They'd never get behind that. Yeah. You know, if Walmart decided to start selling used merchandise, then they'd be totally, utterly screwed. Microsoft would be shot. You know, like, there'd be no hope whatsoever. And to me, that's the killer right there. I mean, like, I'm all for day one DLC and stuff like that, if it's free with a download code, I'm all for it. I'm like that kind of stuff, like what Schilling is talking about. You have my support and my heartfelt appreciation 110%. But when you turn around and look at a company like GameStop, who takes, well, let's say Battlefield 3, which just sold 10 million copies. How many of them are sitting on a used shelf at EB Games right now or at GameStop right now? And how many of them are priced, you know, a new it goes for $59.99. How many of them are priced at $54.99 to $57.99? And how many people are going to buy those games at used price, go home, and realize they got to spend another $10 to $15 to play it online?
Yeah.
Which, to me, like, the problem I have there, I have no problem whatsoever with the download pass, and I have no problem whatsoever with EA charging people who didn't buy the game new $10 for a download pass. No problem whatsoever. None. Absolutely no issue. My issue lies with the fact that stores like EB Games and GameStop are selling these games for $5 less than new price. When they should be at least 10, 15 to be fair. You know, that's my issue. That's my big, that's what really boils me. That's what really pisses me off to no end about used game sales, is that they're just too damn high. The prices are too damn high. When you're looking at, I think, what was it? Modern Warfare 3. I walked into a local store, and Modern Warfare 3 was the same price used as new.
Wow.
The same price. It was $59.99 with a little yellow sticker, right next to it, $59.99 with a little green sticker. And I'm just like, what's the difference? Oh, one's recycled. What's that mean? It's used. Why is it the same price as the new one? That's just completely ridiculous. Oh, well, if you have our promotional card, you can save 10%. But you got to pay for the promotional card.
You know, it's depending on how this goes, man, it is going to be a war.
It is, and what's even crazier about it, it's going to be a shadow war. It's going to be a war that the general public doesn't see. It's going to be one that, like, people like us will be aware of, but most people, most gamers, most guys who go out to buy a game won't even know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it's insane. It's just, I know. I guarantee it. I'd be willing to stake money on the fact that when this Xbox Next or whatever comes out, it's not going to be locked. I highly doubt. I really highly doubt. And, I mean, they're not in the same situation Activision's in. I know there was a story floating around about GameStop going to Activision looking for special pricing on Modern Warfare 3 and basically trying to bully Activision into giving it to them. You know, well, we'll reduce support if you don't, you know, give us a better shake on the price. And Activision turned around and looked at him and said, how many pre-orders of Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 do you have? We can make Walmart the biggest video game supplier on the planet tomorrow if we want to.
Somehow I don't see Bobby reacting to that all that
well. Well, no, this was what their comeback was. Their retort was, you know, you're the biggest today. Walmart can be the biggest tomorrow. You know, like, basically. Because, I mean, you were looking at, you don't bully the big gun, you know, the one game that is guaranteed to sell this fall, you know? You don't go to Call of Duty and say we want a better price. You go to, like, well, now maybe if you'd gone to EA over Battlefield, you might have got away with it. You know? But it's just their tactics, man. It's something's got to change. Something's got to give because people are just getting raped.
Yeah.
On that,
it's been an interesting couple of years.
What's that?
It's going to be an interesting couple of years.
To see how it really is. It's going to be. Well, I mean, when the dust clears and all that kind of stuff. And, I mean, on top of that, we got the console wars to look forward to again. Just as everything started to kind of plateau and everybody's kind of, you know, found their niche of systems and stuff and everybody stopped fighting over whose e-penis is bigger. You know, just as all that's over, they start announcing.
Oh, obviously.
But just as all that has settled, they announce new consoles.
Yeah.
It's like, thanks, guys. Thanks a bunch. Now we got to listen to all that inane, childish crap for another 6 years.
Oh, God. Now I'm depressed. I'm going to go stab an elf.
This has been a depressing episode of Blast Processing. This has been a horribly depressing episode of Blast Processing. This second half has been, you know, it's kind of like Schindler's List, I guess. It's the Schindler's List of Blast Processing.
Oh, dude.
Oh, no. Oh, my God.
Too fair?
Yeah,
okay,
fun.
How about the, I don't know, what other movies are really depressing? The Requiem for a Dream of Blast Processing.
Yeah, I was about to about to hit Aronofsky.
Yeah, so, you know, we don't expect many reruns of this episode. But, you know, if you do like us, subscribe, go over to the...
We're not normally this dour.
Yeah, we're usually a little more upbeat, but when we start talking about used games and shenanigans, then we get foul. But hey, on the plus side, you can always remember that we started this episode with a conversation about Gem and the Holograms.
We totally did. I feel much better now.
Oh shit, that reminds me, I gotta go on Amazon.
So yeah, there you go. You know, if you like what you hear, if you want to subscribe, we've got, you know, there's Blast Processing, there's F This Movie, there's the Friday Filibuster, Sights and Sounds of Cinema, the DVD Verdict family, there's a ton of great podcasts in there. Head over to iTunes, search DVD Verdict Presents, and subscribe. You'll get something new every single day, including another up-and-coming one with myself and John, I think, as soon as we actually record. Do we have a name for that yet, John?
6297, gang!
What? He's not even paying attention. He's searching.
Truly outrageous.
John, you are truly outrageous. Truly, truly outrageous. But yeah,
I think we're going with They Came From the North.
They Came From the North. Awesome. Which is a group of four Canadians rapping about movies instead of video games.
I still think he's got to put the Ushanka hat on that logo.
Kev doesn't even know what we're talking about anymore. He's just like, huh?
What? I'm looking for Jim and Hank's online.
or Kurt Russell's cowboy hat from The Thing where you had to turn like thug style.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Kev is looking for Jim Torrance now. Ooh, look, Jim DVD rip, AC3.
I hope they charge him $10 to play that downloaded file.
It was only on the air for 3 years. Did you know that?
Yeah, but weren't there like 9 billion episodes?
Yeah, it was a 3 syndicated years.
Oh, okay.
65 episodes.
Jesus.
Yeah.
How do you get 65 episodes out of that content?
So yeah, subscribe, iTunes, DVDverdict.com, hit up the forums. We're over there. Leave some feedback. Email. We got email. No, we don't. Maybe we do. We might. I'm not sure. Check it out. There might be email. Other than that, Facebook, Blast Processing, like the page, share it to your friends. We're up to like 90-something now, which is better than when we started.
That's pretty good, man.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to get over 100 before I...
you bitches want t-shirts, we better get over
100. Yeah, t-shirts, yes. Blast Processing t-shirts, maybe even for prizes.
Whoa.
You guys all...
Blasphemy.
You guys all lost out on the super sweet, awesome, extremely exclusive and rare prize that I had for last October. So, you know, don't miss out on t-shirts.
I want a t-shirt with John's face on it.
Yeah?
Yeah, superimposed over the Gem and the Holograms logo.
Do you want, like, John's face is just, like, line artwork? That would be cool. Like, a white glowing outline?
Oh, do I get the pink stuff over my eyes like Jan used to wear?
No, the earrings.
Sweet.
Okay, the first shirt's going to be the Blast Processing logo on the front, and on the back it's just going to say Showtime Synergy.
I'm renaming my laptop Synergy right now.
Good lord. Oh yeah, Blu-ray news. Sneaking it in at the tail end. High Road to China, Blu-ray, April. Awesome. I forgot it earlier. Oh, well. Has nothing to do with video games whatsoever, except that maybe High Road to China could kind of be likened to Uncharted and Crimson Skies.
Yeah, they say maybe Microsoft will give us a new Crimson Skies. That involved them making a new game.
Yeah, that's not going to happen, John.
No.
Maybe they'll put like a Crimson Skies shooter thingy up on Xbox Live for us to play with Kinect.
See, now you've gone and made Kevin cry.
I've gone and ruined Kevin. We're back to depressing again. Somebody talk about Jim again. Anyway, if there's anything we want you to leave you with, if there's anything we want you to take from this episode, anything we want to warm your soul with. It is this.
Oh, Jim, you are truly outrageous. Truly, truly, truly outrageous.
We are out of here.